man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Welcome to Who Shot Ya? It's your boy, If You Whitey Way. It's episode 184. We are 3 episodes away from a Snoop Dogg reference. And today we're talking about movies. And of course, as always, I'm talking about movies with a bunch of my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the king of the critics himself, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
I beg you to stop calling me that. Ah, iffy. I'll tell you, this sounds dumb, but I got a new phone. And, you know, given how much of the world I look at via my phone, it just has changed everything. Like, I feel like I have a whole new outlook on life just because I have a slightly longer rectangle sitting in my hand all the time, you know, telling me what is happening outside of my doors.
I really wanted to put a "that's what she said" on there, but, like, it's both played out and doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. If I'd known, I would have given you a better T-ball.
Next time.
Yes. Anyway, so I know it's dumb and it's, you know, whatever, but it is making my week very good.
Listen, take the joys when you can find them, man. That's exactly. Not dumb.
Ooh, well, I love that. I love that. And someone else I love is also in here with me. It's Queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark. What's good?
Yes. Yeah. Queen of the Midwest coming to you right from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. As intended. What's good with me is slightly technologically based as well. And it mostly has to do with my state of mind. And as you guys know, I'm a gal. I love organization. I love a checklist. I like things neat. I use my inbox as like, this is what still needs to happen. The only things in my inbox or whatever. So this week I created a new folder in my Gmail called Things I Bought. And now whenever I get the like confirmation or the delivery info, it goes into that. It is already, actually, I think I did it a couple weeks ago. It has paid off because I've had a couple things of like, didn't I order some greens powder? Is that coming? And then, oh, snap. Was it right in my Things I Bought folder? Was I able to look at my tracking link immediately? You guys, these are the things that bring me joy.
Was gentle glow of consumerism too many characters? Yes. for a Gmail folder?
You're right. It's not even the technology of it that's tying us together. It's, ooh, I love to buy things.
Mercantilism.
Oh, no, I'm a garbage person. But I'm an organized garbage person.
There you go. That's what matters.
It feels good.
And we always have the bestest of the guestest, and today is no different. It is film critic and host of the podcast, All My Movies, friend of the pod, friend of Iffy Shakude, friend of Alonzo Duralde, Dan Merle. What's good?
Hey, first of all, being here, that's good, right? Thanks for having me on. I also have to say, it's my cousin's birthday today, and Mara, my partner, she is an amazing baker, and my mom asked her to make a cake for my cousin. So downstairs, there is like a 6-layer chocolate cake that we're going to eat later today. That I know is definitely good.
Oh, man.
So when people hear you on the show, they should think of you bathing in the aroma of all that coming from downstairs.
Yes, and also bathing in the chocolate that we're going to put on the cake.
You really one-upped us because you're like, oh, we give homemade gifts. We're not all about buying things over here. This is why I didn't make the friend cut when you were listing off Dan's... Listen, Dan's thinks I'm suspect because of how much I purchase. They're making home-baked goods. That's amazing, and I'm jealous of anybody who can... I've never even attempted a layered cake because they just look daunting as hell.
If I did it, it would be a complete disaster. It's not my forte. I'm very lucky to have found somebody who's good at it.
Iffy, what's good with you?
Oh, what's good with me? This is a what's good that's going to be... That's going to start off general, but then get very Drea-centric towards the end. But, you know, I've been doing lots of things, this new year, you know, transferring to an electric vehicle, trying to lower that carbon footprint. My next step, is trying to get as close to zero waste as possible. So I started using a company that's in me and Casey's neighborhood called Sustain LA. And they and pretty much they sell like your daily basic needs that you could just get refills on instead of buying new things and new packaging. So like dish soap, regular soap. But then they also have like a shit ton of like skincare stuff. And of course I bought like one or two things that I like that I would use, where it's like, okay, I got Swedish towels and there's a thing called Untowel, which are supposed to be washable towels. And then it's like, but I do need this face brush and this nail brush and this like rose water witch hazel spray tonic. And so like I've just been going all in. I've used the face brush. My face is feeling extra glowy because of that, you know, and they have all the smells I like. They're like hand soap is like orange bergamot, which is I love a bergamot and I love a citrus smell. So I'm living it up and I've been really enjoying it. And I still have like a couple of like paper towels that I have, and it's on my paper towel holder. And my challenge is to see how long I can make that roll just last by opting to use the reusable stuff instead of like the paper towel. And so far it's just as thick as it's been, you know, and hopefully, you know, as we halfway through the year, I'll be fully converted. So mostly, you know, the waste that I create is just very minimal.
So I don't know if the part of that that was most me is you buying things or that you worked in skincare, but I would like to...
Yeah,
all
the skincare stuff.
I figured, yeah, and I'd like to put out a reminder that you guys need to run those by me. Like, I really, I want to be approving whatever products you're bringing into your regimen.
I can send you the face, because I used a, I bought a facial bar, and I liked it because it had a, like, like a tea... like the one I got was like tea tree charcoal.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like that's the
great
one.
Both great ingredients.
So yep. I was like, I just tried to go, what would Drea, you know, go pick?
It's but like he, not a question. You can just text Drea. Like,
yeah. So there's,
I'm
I
here
dropped
for
the
that.
Link. Yeah. Oh, so you would be able to
day or night.
Let me know. Yes. But I'm all into it. I'm nice. Super excited. Another thing that I'm super excited, and speaking of zero waste and repurposing things and ideas, today we'll be talking about Coming to America. We'll also answer a call from the Who Shot line, and of course we have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment, Edidic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And first up, we're starting things off just real horny. We're going through a lot of interesting news that's coming out about the Space Jam sequel. You know, the Space Jam, A New Legacy. The first thing was... images of the new Lola Bunny dropped online, featuring a more desexualized version of the female rabbit than the previous iteration. People obviously were mad about it, you know, and it wasn't even the furries. You know, you would think like, oh, the furries. And if you don't know, furries are a group of
Google
people
it.
Online
Google
who
it.
Create furries.
Just Google it. Yeah.
But it wasn't them. It was,
I feel like
regular
our crowd does
grown
know the
ass men. Number two. In the film, Lola Bunny will be seen hanging out with the Amazons from WB and DC's Wonder Woman movies, which I knew, I won't say their name, but someone, you know, a friend of mine who loves the series found out that, yeah, they were trying to do a whole like WB properties universe thing with this. And there were rumors of the Joker. There were rumors. So this is like, okay, I feel like they might have reeled it back, but they couldn't resist it. Number three. Another thing, it was revealed that a scene with the controversial Looney Tunes character Pepe Le Pew was shot, but will not be included in the film. If you don't know the character Pepe Le Pew, it's a character that sees a black cat who was painted with a white strip on her back to look
Pepe
like a skunk.
Pepe is a skunk. Yeah.
And Pepe is a skunk. And he proceeds to grab this cat against her own will to kiss up on her and romance her, and the cat is very much not into it. This also comes off the heels of a viral tweet from New York Times columnist Charles M. Blow, in which he states that Le Pew adds to rape culture. And I just, because it's not in here, I want to point out that the scene, it's rumored that it was going to be LeBron James, you know, teaching Pepe Le Pew about consent. Now, LeBron James, as a Laker, great gold star athlete, I don't know. But I feel like NBA athletes, I feel like all male athletes in general should also be in the same class with Pepe Le Pew. But that's just an iffy take. But we all have to answer this question. Is it important? Do you care?
Oh, brother. I don't care, but, you know, I'm going to have to see this movie anyway. The thing about Pepe Le Pew is that, like, he is outdated in so many ways. First of all, the character is intended to be a parody of Charles Boyer. Who is Charles Boyer, you ask? Somebody who was really popular in the 30s and 40s. And that's usually the kind of well that the original Looney Tunes are dipping into when it comes to pop culture. But yeah, he is, consent does not rank high on his list of things. And even though things turn around on him usually by the end of the shorts, we could just walk away from that character. Like, just because something was popular in the culture once, you know, like, I don't know, blackface, we don't have to just keep doing it because we always have. And, you know, it's a tradition. And how dare you cancel my culture? So, yeah, like, let's just walk away from Pepe.
I have to interject real quick, Alonzo, about Charles Boyer. Not only Charles Boyer, known for the lack of consent, literally the star of the movie that coined the term gaslighting.
Oh, gaslight. Good point. Yes, he is the star of Gaslight.
What the bombshell of a man.
I feel like I should log off now that Iffy's the one that came in with that and not me. Like,
welcome to crazy backward land. I'm talking about Space Jam, and Iffy is interjecting with a classic Hollywood anecdote.
Can I ask a question about Pepe Le Pew, though?
Please.
And I think that this perhaps speaks to both questions that have been offered in this segment. Prior to this week, and maybe when that Dave Chappelle bit came out, when was the last time you or anyone you know, including children, talked about or referenced Pepe Le Pew? I mean, this was on Nickelodeon when I was a kid, and it's the topic of the week.
It's like the six Dr. Seuss books that no one has thought about in years, but now they're going out of print. What? Yeah. What? You know?
No. I happen to reference Pepe Le Pew regularly because one of my dynamics with one of my cats is very much that I'm the Pepe Le Pew, and I'm always like, "Let me hold you." So it is a joke for me that I'm a disgusting skunk that doesn't understand personal boundaries. But yes, in the larger world, like, that stands. It's also the idea of continually, I shouldn't be surprised when people take sides on things like this, things that I think don't require sides. Like, I don't think that desexualizing a cartoon bunny needs a side. That's just like, oh, that's an artistic decision we made. No more commentary needed. And yet Warner Brothers knows this, which is why they released it early, which is why this is part of their marketing rollout.
How dare we not uphold the traditions of the late 90s?
Yeah, well, I feel like I lived a parallel childhood because I was, I think, like 12 or 13 when Space Jam came out. So I guess I'm the same age as a lot of these guys that are upset about this Lola Bunny thing. But, like, maybe I'm the weird one, but, like, I never really wanted to bang Lola Bunny. Like, she was a cartoon character and a rabbit. Those are two things that are inaccessible to me as a human being. Like, why would I ever look at Lola Bunny that way? But I see so many of apparently my peers who are up in arms about this Lola Bunny thing. I feel like I must have grown up in some other pocket dimension separate from everybody else.
You had better access to titillating images probably as an adolescent. Speaking of people who are mad, there's a backlash against Chloe Zhao in China because Disney just always has something going on over there. Nomadland was set to be released in China on April 23rd, but that release is now in jeopardy based on statements that director Chloe Zhao has made several years ago that are perceived as critical of China. Publicity for the film has already been censored on the popular Chinese social media sites Weibo and Douban, and according to Variety, there are two quotes that are responsible for the backlash against the Chinese-born director. One is a quote from 2013 in Filmmaker Magazine, where Zhao said, "It goes back to when I was a teenager in China, being in a place where there are lies everywhere." The second is apparently a misquote on an Australian website that quoted her as saying, "The U.S. is now my country," when in reality she said, "The U.S. is not my country." The website updated the quote, but the damage was already done. Two of China's online movie ticket platforms have already removed Nomadland from its site. The release for Nomadland was always supposed to be relatively small in China, but this could cause serious problems for Disney and their upcoming Eternals movie that is also directed by Zhao. Is this important? Do you care?
Oh, I want to say yes, because on the heels of the Mulan release, I think it's about time. I think Disney has the power to finally be the one to be like, no, fuck off. Like, I think so. I think, you know, I know it's a huge market and it's going to be hard and it's going to be this tug of war. But I think there will be, like, the reason we keep ending up in this loop is because no one wants to take that risk to be like, okay, all right then. And that's the only way stuff like that happens, is you're going to have to take a hit on a few movies. But once China realizes that one of the largest, you know, like blockbuster movie studios isn't going to bend to them, I promise you this type of stuff wouldn't be a problem. But once again, the people who would have to make that money would be the people who, make that Freudian slip, who have to make that decision are the people who are the ones who want to make that money. And it's just a hard thing. But I think you can't, you know, it's just, like, what, are we not going to let Chloe Zhao direct anything anymore because China's mad at her?
Or is she only going to be able to direct things with domestic appeal?
Yeah.
That's why I think it's important. It's why I do care. I think Disney as a company, I think Hollywood in general is approaching a reckoning with the Chinese market, because the Chinese film market is growing. They're becoming more independent. If you look at the box office, like, they don't need American films anymore to generate huge box office revenue. Their films generate box office revenue on their own. But now Hollywood kind of needs China in some ways more than China needs Hollywood. And I think that Disney right now with Chloe Zhao, they are reaching a reckoning point. And also with Mulan and all of the stuff that came out, you know, like their filming locations and then the human rights issues in China, they are going to have to decide, do we choose commerce over ideals and commerce over our artists and thus risk losing our artists? Or do we come up with a market structure that says, okay, we are going to have to do things, and if we alienate the Chinese market on this one, then that's just how it is, and we have to have movies that can weather that, because they're going to have, not just Disney, every studio is going to start hitting these crisis points, and they're going to have to figure it out. And I don't think that the solution is going to be to tell your artists what the Chinese government will and won't find acceptable, et cetera. There's been a lot of that as far as what's in movies, and I think that I think the solution is that these studios have got to figure out a way to make movies that you can do in ways without the Chinese market where it's necessary. That's my opinion.
Money or ethics, which will the corporation choose?
Yeah, that's never going to happen, but that's what I think should happen.
I wonder.
Ethics, right? Are you getting at how they're going to choose ethics?
Well, on that note, I think it's time to go to break and go to Zamunda after we hear from these messages.
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, host of the JV Club podcast. Ah, high school. Was it a time of adventure, romance, and discovery?
Class of 95, we did it!
Or a time of angst, disappointment, and confusion?
We're all tied together by 4 years of trauma at this place, but enjoy adulthood, I guess.
The truth is, it was both.
So join me on the JV Club podcast, where I invite some great friends like Kristen Bell, Angela Kinsey, Oscar Nunez, Neil Patrick Harris, and Keegan-Michael Key to talk about high school, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
My teenage mood swings are getting harder to manage.
The JV Club. Find it on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Dan Merle.
Alonso Duraldi.
And today we're talking about Coming to America. Drea, would you mind providing us with a brief synopsis?
All right, so in Coming to America, you have to emphasize the two because it's the number two. Get it? We once again are reunited with Prince Akeem, played by Eddie Murphy. It begins in the country of Zamunda. And he, his queen, his three daughters, his ailing father are all happening and fabulous, except for the father is about to die. He's worried about the line of succession, and he's also worried about his weak son, who will be presumably assassinated at any moment because of said weakness, probably by the general of Nextoria, played by Wesley Snipes. And so they find out that, in fact, years ago, when Akeem was in Queens looking for a queen, he sired a son he did not know about. And so now he's going to retrieve him, make him the prince, you know, finally get that patriarchal line of succession tight like it's meant to be and just male-oriented. And so then he's dealing with his family and his daughters bracing about their new sibling, and then the new sibling adjusting to his new world. So yes, all with a lot of Africa versus any kind of countries. It's just called Africa.
Kicking this off, more often than not, when there are long periods of times in between sequels, it usually doesn't work well. When does it work, and did this one work for you? I think the closest reference I can have to something like this is the newer Bill and Ted, and that's kind of what I was thinking about kind of watching this, and I think it's very similar in a lot of ways. I think our biggest takeaway was that if you knew Bill and Ted, like, it was fun, it was great. And I think it really, really is the same for this, where it's like, if you were a Coming to America stan, if you loved Eddie Murphy, you're going to love it. All the gang's all back. The bits are all back. The same thing. It's almost like it was just yesterday sometimes.
Oh, if this movie can't, like, recreate or reenact a gag from the first film, they'll just roll the clip.
Yeah, it was really wild to see, because I felt like they had so much. Like, one thing that was kind of like very interesting and landed for me was, like, you know, as someone who's Nigerian, in African culture, it is very like oddly patriarchal in a lot of places, like especially in Nigeria. Like, well, you know, one of my cousins was like, you probably like those American women that talk back, and I was like, oh, that Eddie Murphy made a whole movie about that. But yeah, and so it's like, it's, that's interesting, but I think it does a disservice to show like these three strong daughters and kind of use them more as a prop than actually give them any meat to work with, and focusing on Jermaine Fowler and his arc of discovering the same thing that
Eddie Murphy discovered the first time. Well, yeah, also, it's like, what does it say about Akeem that he's raised these three, you know, intelligent and capable and why, you know, like, incredible daughters, and has not lifted a finger to try and change the rules of lineage in his country where he is, you know, the second in command? It's like, well, you're kind of a jerk then.
Yeah, I was, every scene with that Kiki Layne was in, I was like, oh, I dig this. Like, yeah. I'm digging this storyline. And then it would cut away to, you know, like, to kind of do the same story with Jermaine Fowler that was the exact same arc that Eddie Murphy had in the first movie. And I when I got done with the movie, I was like, you know, this part's I liked. But I was like, there's a much better movie sitting, like, literally in the background of a lot of these shots, because, like, crazy stuff would happen and they cut to Kiki Layne and then they go to the other crazy stuff. I'm like, no, stay on her. Like, she's the story of this movie, I think. think.
I love that you said that, Dan, because that's how I feel. I feel like it should be flipped, where Kiki's story is the foreground mm-hmm. and Jermaine is the back. That makes so, like, that movie is great, where it's like, oh, you're referencing the previous movie through this, like, BC story, and the A story is following this woman, totally flipping the dynamic, but yeah. We don't.
Also, yeah. Because she's sort of her early 20s. It's not like they're this, oh, we didn't really ever think about the line of succession before. Like,
yeah.
You're royalty, that's all you ever think about. And this girl, her whole life is presumably, especially as she developed and recognized herself as a capable leader, this is not a discussion that should just be happening now. I mean, presumably yeah. These are things that could have come in a long time ago, and putting her in the forefront would have changed that. One of the things that was interesting, so I really remember liking Coming to America. Sorry, that's a soft T. Coming to America.
It's so the confusing. They're phonetically the same. It's such so a weird silly. Decision. Yeah. Continue.
But I saw it elementary school. Like, I haven't seen this movie in 20 years. And so there were plenty of things that I was like, oh, I think I'm missing. I mean, they're pretty heavy-handed, so it's kind of like there's this recurring thing with this woman who talks like a dog, and I was like, oh, I'm guessing that's something that was like would be more rewarding to me if I knew where that was set up. And they call back to it, and then they even show it, like Alonzo said, there's a literal flashback, and I was like, oh, okay, I was right, so that's cool. But it didn't yeah. hit with me, because I'm not a new viewer, but in some ways I am. Like, the stuff I remember was like the barbershop stuff, or, you know, the beautiful presentations. Like, I was more familiar with Busta Rhymes' Put Your Hands Where My Eyes Can See music video that went off, like, was styled in the manner of Coming to America than I was with the film. So
I saw Coming to America in 1988 as a grown-ass man already, and then didn't watch it again in the ensuing years, but I did watch it again before reviewing this one. And I kind of wish I hadn't, because it just sort of drove home how much of this movie, I said in my review that it's like, this is less a sequel than it is one of those sort of reunion TV specials where they get the old cast back together again and then have them do their old shtick again. And you're right. I think there is a whole other movie that's sort of in the wings that you kind of wish they had made instead, because, for example, Teyana Taylor, best known as a singer and a dancer. But if you have seen Madea's Big Happy Family, you know that she can be hilarious in a movie. And so to put her in this film and then to relegate her to looking awesome in outfits and then basically repeating all of the dialogue from the first movie of the intended bride, you know, being constantly supplicant to her fiance, it's like, really? That's all we're going to get?
Even that dialogue. I was actually surprised, because to me, I'm like, Teyana Taylor is a star. So I was...
Oh, yeah.
And then she has this amazing, like, beautiful entrance. And other than the cringe factor of me listening to them sing Prince, that I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. Like, not this one. No, not this way.
You know.
But she's also, such a star, and that I expected her storyline to go yeah. somewhere different, too.
Absolutely. And then and Wesley Snipes, who is, when we talked about, you know, Dolomite Is My Name, he was such a revelation in that movie, because he so rarely gets to be funny. Like, it's basically To Wong Fu, White Men Can't Jump, you know, Dolomite. And then I thought, oh, great, he's going to be in this. It's the Dolomite director. Like, he's going to come up with something just from another planet the way he did in Dolomite, and it's going to be great. And he's like, no, you're actually plot functionary guy. Like, that's all you're getting to do in this movie.
Well, it's not, but he really takes what he can do and then is I'm going to chew this 18 ways to Sunday. Like,
no question. He's fireman's carrying it as far as he can, yeah. But it's just, there's no, they don't give him anything to do, really, which is really annoying.
That's what I said when I was talking about the film. It seems like every time, because I said it about it in Dolomite too, and I like Dolomite a lot, but I remember in my review for Dolomite, I said, Dolomite Is My Name, I said, man, Wesley Snipes is really underused in this movie. He's so great. And then I finished Coming to America and I was getting my notes together and I'd written down, man, Wesley Snipes is so underused in this movie. He's really great. It's like, why do we keep underusing Wesley Snipes? We didn't have him, you know, and now we've got him back.
I want a buddy comedy with Wesley Snipes and Delroy Lindo. And they can or cannot go to some jungle area.
And while I didn't love the plot machinations in which they brought her into the film, I did enjoy Leslie Jones. I felt like she was bringing something. She was bringing a new energy that we hadn't gotten from the first film.
Leslie Jones can be weaponized in very specific ways. And this one, I think, utilized her well, edited her well. Like, they made it work, because I've seen other things where I feel like she's been put in scenarios where they're just like, okay, here's the setup. Now just go wild. And then it's just like, it doesn't feel human, or it doesn't whatever, but there's a spark that she brings to things. And she also, although again, the other, not to make another like wildlife pun, but the elephant in the room is too, this whole thing is predicated on a sexual assault, basically, that like she drugged and had sex with a not, like that Eddie Murphy not only doesn't know that Prince Akeem sired a son, but thought he had never had sex before. And so I'm like, ooh, I guess we're going to jump right past all that. And because I wasn't familiar with, I didn't remember the first one enough to notice that they were following the direct arc, I was like, oh, for sure, at some point, they're going to finally do a paternity test and discover, what I thought they were doing is they were going to discover he was not actually his son, but by then he was in love with Kiki Lane, and then the dad would still do the transferring of power or whatever, like looking at the rain. But so that when Marembe is introduced, I was like, oh, this is not, of course, everyone else watching was like, knew exactly what movie was coming. So what,
well, they're
fun
half
for
siblings
me.
They're not going to fall in love, although there was touch and go for a second there.
It seemed like it was one of those things where they knew they wanted to get in all these throwbacks, cutaways and all this, and they just weren't building that like mainline story, because the mainline story would have focused on someone who wasn't them. But a way we saw it work was in Bill and Ted, where these two new characters who play their daughters are the focus of this story. And we still got the same throwbacks. We still got the same, all that. I think it's that fear. And I would have really loved to see that. I mean, as someone who's like a big fan of Coming to America, I liked it. It still made me chuckle. But it's one of those things where you're like, I think I felt like Dan, where it's like, there's a better movie to be had here.
And you had 30 years to write it.
I know.
Yeah. It's like you showed it to us too. At least hide the better movie.
Kiki Lane totally got Worfed. Star Trek fan. I call it Worfed, which is that Worf is always in the background and everyone tells you that he's a mighty Klingon warrior, but in order for everyone else to prove that they're like an opposing villain, they have to kick Worf's ass. And so he never actually gets to be a mighty warrior. Everyone just talks about how he's a mighty warrior. And that's what I felt about Kiki Lane. It's is amazing. Like, they tell you that she's very competent, but also to prove that she's being slighted, she just gets interrupted all the time or cut off, and it's just like, well, no, just show me like being like a really competent great ruler, and then at the end, if you're gonna be, then that makes a lot more sense. But you know, she got Worfed.
I have one quick question before we wrap up, Iffy, and obviously there's not like one monolithic opinion about this, but do you have any feel for like how people in Africa take Coming to America? Like, do they sort of roll their eyes like, this is America's idea of what Africa is? Like, are there,
well,
do critics
I used to
talk about
always
it?
Tell my dad like he should sue Eddie Murphy for stealing his story, you know, people were like dunking on like the accents and all this stuff. I think now the diaspora is more on people's minds, and like the fact that we don't have to create any more fictional African places. I think we can stop at Zamunda and Wakanda and like tell these real stories. If there were a new IP that did something like this, I'd probably be more up in arms, but there were like a lot of things where I was like, okay, like them like looking out of this palace and seeing like zebras and stuff, I'm like, okay.
My friend Leila Janzi is a filmmaker from Ghana who had a problem with the representations of like the generic elements of Africa. And for her, it was like the warlords, the child soldiers, that it's in the jungle, all the animals. Mm-hmm. She's like, I lived in Ghana for like 15 years straight and never saw a squirrel. So the idea of like, you're just giving this one version of it versus, again, the fact that it's a continent and not just like, Africa, it's like the size of Delaware. Like, it's full of more countries. Oh, okay, forget
jungle
it,
from coast to coast.
Yeah. So that's the one thing of that. And I would like to shout out to Layla, because She did post about that.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I guess it's time to vote on the movie. You know, returning listeners will know this. People in the Shout fam will know this. But if you're new, you know, from the Dan Hive listening, the way we rate movies on this pod is, would you snap it up on physical media, being the highest rating, stream it, being the middle range rating, and skip it, you get it. So, let's kick it off with our guest Dan. Let's hear you out.
It's difficult because I was very in the middle on this movie. I did have some laughs, but at the same time, I didn't feel the story was that strong. There were stretches where I didn't laugh much, so I was very mixed on the film. When I did my review for my channel, I ended up tilting to the negative, saying like I wouldn't recommend it fully, but I also think that there's enough there, like, for me to say that you and I say this a lot, like, you know, my opinion, my review, that's my opinion. I'm not here to tell you whether you should see a movie. I'm here to tell you what I think of the movie.
You don't think as a critic you should be held to everything you say and then have things that you've criticized in the past compared to it? So like if you like did a bad review of like DC, you know, a DC right. movie, someone's like, but you gave a good review to Dragon Ball Evolution, as if like everyone should know anime the same way that you religiously do with your anime avatar. You're saying, is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, I mean, privately, I know for a fact that I am the sole arbiter of what's right or wrong, but publicly, I feel like I have to at least...
This is a disclaimer.
Yes, exactly.
Like on The Muppet Show.
So while I personally didn't recommend the film, I think there's enough there that if someone were to ask me, I would say, you know what, stream it. You know, a lot of it wasn't for me, but maybe you'll like it a little bit more than I did. So I would say stream it.
I'm also a stream it in a lot of the same, like, it wasn't as funny as I expected. I'm also someone who did grow up with versions of Eddie Murphy. Like, I think of him as like laugh a minute. There's a sweetness to it that I don't hate. I've also seen much messier films that have much less like good intent behind them. Truthfully, again, just see it for the costumes, see it for Fatima Robinson's choreography. But there's so many actors and actresses and performers in this that I'm delighted to get aired. So just watch it for them. And if you're like me, you know, you can maybe also do a jigsaw puzzle as you're watching.
Yeah, I was tempted to go skip it, but I think it is a stream it while also having a magazine open, because there are some scenes that land. You do want to look at the costumes. You do want to enjoy some of the aspects of it. But it kind of boils down to this for me. If you didn't like Coming to America, you aren't going to get anything super greatly new out of this one, with a few exceptions. And if you did like Coming to America, you could just watch Coming to America again and kind of have the same experience, because that's all this one wants to be, pretty much.
So with me, I'm going to piggyback off of Alonzo's review and say, but if you loved Coming to America and you watched it over again, you're a big fan of 90s Biggie's videos and 90s rap videos where you're like, oh shit, all these cameos, then you are going to have a treat. This is a snap it up on physical media with the asterisk that we use sometime in the, I'd like to call it the cult asterisk, where it's like, this is going to be a movie you have on at the party and people are just kind of like, oh, okay, yeah. And then that, oh, what, Tiana Taylor? What is Rick Ross doing here? Oh, snap. Oh yeah, it's all these people. And like, you're not going to mind not getting the story, because you're coming back to see all your favorite characters from the first one rehashed. And to you see that you know, that great Irishman technology that they used to really to shoehorn in this story beat, you know, you're gonna get that. Because I it was a real treat. It was one of those things, and it's funny because I feel like this is when you are a movie liker, that's what we call, yep. I don't use cinephile, I say movie liker. You have the ability to really appreciate a movie, but then objectively be like, yeah, no, I wouldn't tell y'all to watch this. <I wouldn't, laughs> like when you make rice
slightly undercooked because you like the crunchiness, you're like, I'm not gonna serve this to anybody, but I'm gonna eat it because I like the crunch.
Oh my god.
Ify will watch anything that has Louis Anderson in a dashiki.
Oh my god. I screamed partly because I forgot he was still I was like, what? Oh yeah.
It did make me want to rewatch the first one. So if we vote on that, I'm gonna definitely get my eyeballs on the first one.
Yeah, just be aware, this movie factually is contradicted by the first movie. Like, you see the premise of this movie does not hold up in any way once you watch this, because I watched it directly before, and I when they said, like, oh yeah, we brought some girls back after we went out to the club, I was like, no, they didn't. I just watched it. I felt like misery. I was just like, they didn't get out of the cockadoody car. I'm like, no.
Speaking
they didn't
of Charles
bring any girls
Boyer's
back.
Gaslighting.
Sydney said he hadn't had sex since they were in New York. This didn't happen this way. So
listen,
just beware.
Listen here, Dan. I'm looking at those comic pages behind. You know what a retcon is.
I
and
do.
This was a clear retcon.
This is a very
also,
long
time. They, you know, you could retcon it, you know, through a cutscene, or you can literally use a whole season of a Disney Plus show to retcon someone's power.
That's very true. That is very true.
Which as a nerd, I love. That was great. Here, it was all right. We'll be right back after hearing from another show for Maximum Fun. So sit right there.
Hi, I'm James, host of Minority Corner, which is a
podcast that's all about intersectionality. It's hosted by James with a guest host every week.
Discussing all sorts of wonderful issues, nerdy and political.
Pop culture.
Black, queer, feminism.
Race, sexuality.
News.
You're going to learn your history, their self-empowerment, and it's told by what feels like your best friend.
Why should someone listen to Minority Corner?
Why not?
Oh my God, free stuff.
There's not free stuff.
The listeners of Minority Corner will enjoy some necessary LOLs, but mainly a look at what's happening in our world through a colorful lens.
People will get the perspective of marginalized communities.
I feel heard. I feel seen.
Like you said, you need to understand how to be more proactive in your community, and this is a great way to get started.
Join us every Friday on Max Fun or wherever you get your podcast.
Minority Corner.
Because together, we're the majority.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Dan Merle,
Drea Clark.
And now it's time to listen to a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, play that call.
Hi, guys. This is Matt from Memphis, Tennessee. And I'm 17 and I use they, them pronouns. So my question is, as a teenager who's mostly uninterested in romance, the thing that I look for in the media that I consume is found family. And recently the thing that I've been watching the most with found family in it is the Lord of the Rings movies. Just love that fellowship so much. So I was wondering if you guys had any recommendations for movies with found family at the core, or just scenes of found family throughout. Thank you guys for keeping me sane through the pandemic and for being the highlight of my Friday. Love you guys so much. Bye.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah. So sweet. I got one right out the gate. And this was actually won a Best Foreign Film Oscar, but I don't think people talk about it so much lately. And that's Antonia's Line. Which you can stream on Hoopla, and it is about a generations in a Dutch village where they've basically kind of formed a matriarchy, and it's these sort of misfits in society who sort of come together and take care of each other, and it's a beautiful film, and it's so much about kind of being cultural outsiders and yet finding each other and taking care of each other, and that's just the first movie I thought of when I heard this question.
Your movie is so much fancier than any that I went to. I will say, I just want to talk about, like, I love their choice of the Lord of the Rings and looking at it as found family, because I don't think I'd ever thought of that, either the books or the just that content, that IP, you guys, in general as found family. But that is one of the reasons that the film series franchise, whatever, works so well, and how much you love them and how they grow and bond. So I want to shout out to that. On a similar but goofier tip, I feel like Guardians of the Galaxy has a great sort of a motley crew of ragtag misfits who all end up like bonding, and those they successively in each film get more and more sort of gentle with each other and soft and just aware of each other's boundaries and how they care. And I think it's so lovely. I find them very fun and enjoyable as well, but they had a different world setting certainly than Lord of the Rings, but that same kind of, you know, on a quest, people who've come together from disparate backgrounds and found connection, which I love.
I've got a couple. They're both animated. One of them is the Iron Giant, because I think that's very much about, you know, a couple on both sides, sort of a found family. That's more of a one-on-one connection. And the other one is, actually the first movie I ever saw. I still have the childhood stuffed animal here. But An American Tale, which is a Don Bluth animated film from the 80s, the mid-80s. And it's the tale of, you know, a mouse that immigrates to America and he loses his family. But I've always loved that he picks up this band of people, and it's very much about the melting pot of America. And, you know, he meets this kind of streetwise New York mouse. And, you know, this gang of people that help him find his family. One of them is a cat named Tiger, who is voiced by Dom DeLuise. And there's a pigeon who's voiced by Christopher Plummer. And I've just always loved the fact that, you know, he's separated from his actual family, but, you know, he's coming to America. In arriving in America, he finds all of these different people and different kinds of people, and I think it's very much kind of the American story, an American tale, if you will. I've revisited it a few times since I was a kid, and, you know, it's got the nostalgia hits from just loving it when I was a kid, but I've also found very much as I've grown up that I appreciate this group of people that he meets, because they become his surrogate family as he's searching to find his blood relatives.
And while we're talking about animation, I just want to piggyback real quick with Raya and the Last Dragon, which just dropped on Disney Plus. Very much like the Lord of the Rings films, it is about people on a quest who are either literal orphans or who are separated forcibly from their families because of circumstance, and who kind of form this circle of people who take care of each other.
Yeah. All right. You know, I would be remiss if I weren't to mention probably one of the greatest found family movies, no found family franchises of all time, and that would be The Fast and the Furious.
Is it about family? I think.
Yes. Yeah. It's about.
It's all about family.
It's all about family, and your real family found through, you know, some people are born into families, and some people steal DVD players and eventually build a
stronger
family.
And some people
family.
Build their families, you know, 60 miles. What is it?
A quarter mile at a time.
Some people eat tuna sandwiches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. That was a great question.
Yes. Thank you so much for calling. I'm very touched by that you've been enjoying the show during the pandemic. So thank you.
I know. Yes. We will be here for you with takes about skincare, takes about movies, and takes about all the other dumb shit I'm buying while stuck inside. Yeah, but if you'd like to get at us on the Who Shot line, you can call us at the number WSY-803-1664. And now, it is time for our staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Drea, why don't you start?
All right. So I have a film that you know, this year has been hard in terms of tracking when things were released and if things were released. And is this online now? Can people rent it? And so I hadn't realized it's a film that premiered at Cannes in 2019, and it's called The Climb. And it was a very unexpected positive movie for me, because I thought, I was like, sure, I'm just going to like it. It's about two white guys who've been friends for a very long time. But it's so well done. It's so interesting. And, you know, the crux of it starts that one of them is just gotten engaged and the other one reveals that he slept with the fiance. And then it follows this friendship for a couple of years through a lot of different sort of ups and downs in their lives. And it's really funny and really insightful. And I particularly appreciated, you guys know, I love something about men with emotional maturity who are like gaining in their vocabulary of how to talk about their feelings and their relationships. So, I ate that up. But it's a good watch. I think it's available on Amazon Prime, but it's definitely rentable a lot of places now. So it's a hidden gem for sure. And it's fun. It's a fun view.
I got a book this week. My friend Tim Grierson has a book called, and I love a title that cuts to the chase, This Is How You Make a Movie. And
this
he basically
is how you make a movie.
Exactly. So what he's done is kind of taken like the art of filmmaking and sort of chopped it down to fundamental parts, editing and acting and writing and lighting and camera angles and sound and all these different issues. And he kind of gives, he'll take specific films and use them as examples of how to do this thing. And then he'll have quotes from the filmmaker sort of walking through the process of like, here's how I did it. Here's why I did it. And so, you know, oftentimes people will talk about like, oh, I listened to this many director's commentaries and now I don't have to go to film school. And, you know, I think there are a lot of different, for people who don't want to go to film school, but do just sort of want to understand the mechanics and the breakdown of how movies work and how they get put together. This is a really fascinating read, I think. And it is just chopped down into a lot of little short chapters, which is a really good way to read a book and not feeling like you're being overwhelmed by information. And, you know, it's a breezy read, but it's an informative read. And I think you'll come out of it with a better idea of just how movies do what movies do. So yeah, Tim Grierson's This Is How You Make a Movie. It's out now. It just came out this week, so wherever books are sold.
My recommendation is a movie that is almost surely going to be overlooked when Oscar nominations come out very soon. And that is, it came out last year. I was a little slow on the uptake. I didn't see it until late in 2020. I apologize if it's brought up on the show before, but it's a movie called Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, which is directed and written by Eliza Hittman. It stars Sidney Flanagan. It should be in the conversation for the awards. It's not gonna be because the consensus always builds as the award season goes, and there are about 12 movies that are determined to be the ones that get chosen for the awards, and Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, I think by virtue of coming out too early in the year, along with The Five Bloods, is going to be completely overlooked because other movies came out later in the year. It's wonderful how the system works, but it is a really, I mean, it's a devastating movie, but it's also a very beautiful movie. It's so well acted. It fills in the blanks that need to be filled in. It leaves things open that don't need to be filled in, and I think the movie is better for it. And it is a movie about, I mean, it's about two young girls who, you know, one of them is pregnant and it goes to New York City to have an abortion. And it doesn't feel like it's supposed to be a message movie. It just feels like a human story. And it's wonderfully crafted. It's wonderfully acted. There is a scene in it that's just, I mean, it's literally two people talking in a room, but it's as powerful as any other scene I could recommend from 2020. Such a great movie. One of those that I think could so much have used that award show boost of people talking about it. But, you know, I think it's nominated for independent awards and it's probably do well there. But I hate that there's this sort of division line drawn behind, okay, these are the movies that get nominated for the independent awards because they're this big, and these are the movies that get into the conversation for the big boy awards because, you know, they were at this festival or they were, you know, this. I wish that you could mix them up a little bit more than they have been. But if you're looking for one of the best movies of last year, that is, I would be delighted if it were in some of the Academy Award nominations. I just don't think it's going to be. I highly recommend Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always because I will put it up with any other movie that came out in 2020.
We did a whole episode on it. Yeah. You are in good hands good. Here.
It was okay. In my top 10.
It was in my top 10 for the year,
Drea,
too.
Where'd that movie premiere, Drea?
You know, it's interesting, Alonzo. That movie did premiere at the Sundance Film Festival.
No kidding. Yeah. Wow.
I'm glad you brought that
odds?
Up.
Okay. Yeah.
No, love
you don't
it.
Know,
good call, Dan.
Dan, Drea programmed Sundance all by herself.
Oh my God! Wow. I do not.
That's so big. So that's how.
Casey, you edit that out right now.
Just a reminder for those of you who might have listened to the show the week that you guys did it. But if you didn't listen to it, go back. I'm going to go back and listen to that episode.
He's right.
Now,
yes.
I love that movie.
Please do. Yeah. And yeah, go watch it. That was one of those movies that hit theaters right when theaters started closing.
Yep.
And it was very, you know, I wish better for that film and I hope that people discover it because it's great.
If you follow this movie that we all love, what you got?
Oh yeah. This one is actually going to be another short recommend. I've just been watching it nonstop because I loved it. This one actually had a strong festival run actually a few years ago. But it's a quick one. It's on Vimeo now, which is real tight about shorts. It's like if you miss it, but yeah, it came out in 2014 and it was by Bernardo Brito. It's called Yearbook. Oh,
I programmed that. Yes.
Oh, see, I told y'all.
We played that at LA Film Fest. Yeah, yes, good call.
I cannot, like, I've been watching it. It's only 5:30 and I've watched it nonstop. It's one of the things why I do like, if you're ever at a film fest or, you know, a South By I think is coming up, or if you do any digital ones, please check out the shorts. Like, it's usually fun. I think a lot of times they get overlooked by like the big features, but seeing like these strong, powerful stories told only in like 5 to 15 minutes is always such a treat, because it's like a snack. But yeah, the music and the story, it's very short and sweet. It's about, you know, a man who is tasked with writing a yearbook of everything in the world because the world's about to be destroyed, and just him slowly having this existential crisis. And it's good. I'm probably going to watch it again after we're done here.
Nice.
Yeah. Alrighty. So I love that this was a Drea. program. You know, looking sad. But now, speaking of programs, good programming, and good programs, it's time for our 5-star review. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it on air. Like this one from Becca DB. I found this podcast a few months ago, and now it's a must listen for me. I think what sets it apart are how different the hosts are. They have different backgrounds and tastes, and that means the perspectives are always interesting, and it doesn't feel like the movies are reviewed in an echo chamber. I also love a movie podcast that doesn't get too pretentious. Y'all tease him all you want, but the fact that if he put Sonic in his top 10 for last year is one of the reasons I'm so hooked. And now Dan knows that I put Sonic in my top 10 for last year.
Let us never forget.
I didn't hate that, it. I don't hate it.
Oh, yeah, look. That and you have the best Christmas zaddy in the world.
Oh.
I listen to that 60 seconds download as its own podcast. Don't get any ideas, Alonzo. Love you guys. Keep up the great work.
Oh, thanks, Becca DB.
Thank you, Becca.
That would be a fun concept of a 60-minute podcast.
A 60-second podcast?
Yeah, 60-second. Yeah, sorry.
I was like, we have podcast. A 60-minute podcast.
Imagine.
What a novel concept. A 60-minute podcast.
And 30 seconds is a mattress ad.
Yeah.
You're over there pitching 8-minute abs over there.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, so thank you so much, Becca DB. This is so sweet. Dan, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, I've got my podcast, All My Movies, that airs every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple and everywhere else that you get audio podcasts. It also airs on the Schmodown Entertainment Network on YouTube. We take a different movie off my shelf. It's all about movies that I own on Blu-ray, on physical media. So I take a different movie off the shelf every week. I go into stories about, you know, how it was made, my memories with the movie, how it's affected my life. I like to bring people on the show and talk about their memories of it. It's a lot of fun. It's going to be a forever long podcast if we're going to actually get to every one of them, but it's a lot of fun to do. Like I said, you can find that on Apple and also Spotify and Stitcher and all the other audio podcast places, as well as SEN over on YouTube. And then I've got a YouTube channel, youtube.com/DanMurrellMovies, where I do movie reviews and talk about WandaVision, stuff that's on Disney Plus, talk about The Mandalorian. I have a box office show every week, and the box office seems to actually be making a comeback, which is great because I've been just making stuff up for a year. So it's fun to be getting back to all that
stuff.
You can
put away the puppets, finally.
Exactly. I did a whole show where it's like I pretended it was 1999 and filmed it like as if it was in my teenage bedroom. Like, it got crazy. Nice. I didn't know what to do, but we're back on track now. So I love to see you over there as well.
Ooh.
Yay.
All right. And, you know, Dre and Alonzo, thank you so much, as always. Is there anything you'd like to say before we get on out of here, finally?
See you next week.
Ooh. Yes, I second that.
Okay, well, look, before we go, look, y'all, don't hit stop yet. Before we go, we have a small favor to ask. All of us at Max Fun are asking our listeners to tell us what our show means to you. So, what does our show mean to you? We want to hear from you. Tell us why you like us. It helps us to better understand what about this show works for y'all. So please write us an email at memberstories@maximumfun.org or call us at 323
323-601-8719. That's 323-601-8719. This number will also be in the show notes for this episode, so please, please call in. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien, our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.